My name is Marvin L. Storm. I am the host of the Business Exit Stories podcast. Since this is a new podcast in a very specific niche of business podcasts, I thought I would share with you a little bit of the reasons why I picked this niche. One of the primary reasons is that I believe one of the biggest mistakes that entrepreneurs make is not adequately planning for the eventual sale of their business. Since I will be hosting a podcast where we will be talking about the stories of others, I thought it would be a good idea for me to tell you a little bit about my story, and for me to share a little of who I am, my background, and why I decided to start a podcast, as well as why I picked the story format to talk about how and why entrepreneurs exit their businesses. To begin, I thought it would be a good idea for me to give you a little peek into my family history, and over the next three episodes, paint a picture of what makes me tick, why I feel qualified to talk about business exits, primarily because I've had several exits myself, and what I really want to accomplish with this podcast. So let's get started. My backstory of who I am and how I became an entrepreneur really start with my early family history. A number of years ago, I got interested in family history. I started doing research, like a lot of us do nowadays, on the internet, and found that my family, on my father's side, immigrated from Bavaria, which is now Germany. My immigrant ancestor was Peter Sturm, spelled S-T-U-R-M. After immigrating in 1632 to the mid-Atlantic states in Virginia, Peter Sturm and his family, over the next 100 years or so, began to immigrate inland, first to Ohio and then into Illinois. In the late 1700s, the Sturm families had become fairly prosperous in Illinois. A number of years ago, I made a family history trip back to Illinois and in Shelby County, which is in central Illinois. In a small community, I visited a church, and in the back of the church was a cemetery. As I walked through the cemetery, I was amazed at the hundreds of tombstones, grave markers that I was able to see. The Sturm family probably had 50 or 60% of the entire, population, if you call it that, of this cemetery was of the Sturm family. Upon further research, the Sturm family was fairly successful in that area and had become one of the major families in that area, quite noteworthy at the time. I was really interested to find that out because, my family that I grew up with were not noteworthy in any way, really, other than I really admired my mother and father, but that was the notoriety that they primarily received and as I was growing up. At the age of 15, my grandfather ran away from home. I don't know really the reasons that he left home, but he packed up and took off and struck out on his own at a very young age. As such, that was in the late 1800s, and he somehow got hooked up with the cattle drives down in Kansas, and which took him eventually down into Texas. For the next 10 years or so of his life, he was driving cattle on a continuous cycle from Texas up to the Dakotas. He would be on a cattle drive driving hundreds and thousands of head of cattle from Texas up to the Dakotas. On one of these trips, he broke his leg. And in order to recover, he was put up in a boarding house. And this boarding house was really in South Dakota, northwest corner of South Dakota, in a little community called Hoover in Butte County. And this little boarding house that he was put up in to recover was run by the Tatrell family. Now, the history of the Tatrell family is that my grandmother's family had immigrated from France as servants to Jesuit priests. they immigrated to Canada in French Quebec. And from there, they left that area and migrated into the Dakotas and set up this dairy farm, kind of a boarding house, which was at that time called a halfway house, and general store. And this is where my father, after being injured, was recovering. And he met my grandmother at that time. And over the next few months, as he was recovering, they struck up a romance and eventually got married. Well, now having a wife and the idea of starting a family, the lifestyle of a trail hand on a cattle drive didn't really fit very well. So they got a farm and ranch in the area by homesteading. And this was part of the Homestead Act at that period of time, where you got 160 acres and you homesteaded it. And they began their family out in this very desolate part of the Dakotas and started sheep ranching as well as raising cattle and horses. Well, for the next 10, 15 years, they began their family and began acquiring additional parcels of ground, both by homesteading as well as purchasing different parcels of land of varying sizes. I actually went back and looked at the deeds and of the property back in that time, and from the late 1800s to the 1920s and 30s, my grandfather and grandmother assembled fairly large ranching operations back there. My grandfather raised a lot of horses and sold them to the U.S. military during World War I. Was a fairly successful sheep rancher as well as raising cattle. I had an opportunity to go back and actually visit the family homestead a number of years ago. It was interesting. My father was born on the ranch, but never really talked about it a lot. I didn't have any interest in history at the time growing up, and so I never really asked him much about it. And I really felt that that was a real missed opportunity to learn about my heritage and what life was like on a ranch in what would be considered the Wild West at the time. The turn of the century and through the 1920s and 30s. But I never really found out much about it. Fortunately, I had a cousin that was born on the ranch and lived her young years through her teenage years on the ranch. And she has some very vivid memories, which she has written down in a story form and has shared with me. And she talked a little bit about what the life was like in that era. And I really gained an insight that ranchers and farmers that settled the West and in the 1800s were really entrepreneurs. They were really the true entrepreneurs. They had to figure things out on their own. There wasn't a lot of resources for them to draw from. They just had to figure it out as they went along. And that was the picture that my cousin shared with me and told me about what life was like on the ranch. One of the things, as I stood on the actual farmhouse, ranch house, that my grandfather had built, and which is still standing today, by the way, although in a fairly dilapidated condition nowadays. But as I stood on the porch of that home and looked out over the prairie, and I tried to visualize what life was like as my father grew up on this ranch. And the thing that I read through my cousin's memories and her stories that she shared in written form with me, one of the things that really was stark and very evident as I stood on that porch was that when you lived in this part of the world and the winter came around, and I don't know if any of you know what winters are like in the prairies of Montana, Wyoming, North and South Dakota. In the dead of winter, it is very bleak, it is cold, it is windy. You know, with the wind chill factor dropping down to 20, 30, 40 below zero at times, with drifting snow and that howling wind, and you didn't have double pane windows and you didn't have insulation. It was a frame house made out of wood, single pane windows, a wood fireplace. No insulation in the attic, or the shingles on the house were just wood shingles. And I tried to visualize life and the months upon months during the winter when they were isolated and really existed as a family, relying on just their ingenuity, their kind of entrepreneurial spirit to be able to survive that time during the late fall when they could go to town and get provisions in the wagon and they would bring it back. And then they would bunker down for the next 3 or 4 months as winter settled in. And they never emerged and would go back to town in the spring in the March-April time frame to stock up for summer provisions. And I thought about how if they got sick or if they ran out of something or if there was an accident or anything that was out of the ordinary, they weren't going anyplace. They were snowed in most of the time. At the time of my father's early years, they didn't have a car. They relied on horse and carriage and buggy and wagons. And it was a pretty rough and tough environment. And so as I learned more about my family history and stood in the home that my grandparents had grown up in and my father was born and grew up in and left when he was a late teenager, I gained a great appreciation for my ancestors. And I believe that some of the entrepreneurial spirit that I have is really bred into who I am through genes and through that rough and tumbled and rugged frontier attitude that my grandparents and my dad had. There were 5 kids in my father's family, 1 girl who was the oldest, and my dad was the youngest son. None of my brothers, his brothers, really wanted to follow or pursue ranch life. And so when they were late teenagers and their early 20s, they struck out and left the homestead and made a life of their own, leaving my grandfather, mother, and my dad on the ranch, along with an older brother of his. That older brother that stayed there was born on the ranch and had a very tough delivery, as I'm told. And because of the lack of medical procedures at the time and the rough delivery birthing that he had, he was somewhat handicapped, mentally challenged. And in those days, they called him slow. And so he stayed on the ranch, and he was a farmhand, ranch hand, with my dad. My dad would, being the youngest, was always given the more routine or mundane jobs. And one of those jobs was being a sheep herder. And he would go for 2 months at a time, sometimes in the summer, to herd sheep, him with his collie and a little trailer house they had. And he would spend weeks and months at a time herding sheep. Well, my grandfather in the mid-1940s became ill, got cancer, and eventually passed away. Well, this left my dad, who was 17 at the time, and my grandmother and an older brother that wasn't really capable of managing the ranch. They tried to manage the ranch for a period of time. My dad, I think at one time, thought that it would be good for him to become a rancher, but it was just too much for them. The place was too big. They had assembled too many parcels of land. It was a large operation, and with my grandfather gone, that wasn't viable. So they decided to sell the ranch, and they came to the nearest town, the town which they got most of their provisions, as my dad grew up on that ranch, a small town called Belfouche, South Dakota. Interestingly enough, my grandmother being from France and able to speak French. Belfouche in French means beautiful fork. And so the town of Belfouche sat on a fork of 2 rivers that were tributaries to what became the Missouri River and then which flowed into the Mississippi River and down into the Gulf of Mexico. But in this little community, my grandmother sold the ranch, moved to town. They bought a home in town. And my dad, all he knew was ranch life at the time, and being on a ranch, one of the things he became really good at was repairing things and fixing things, the farm equipment, the ranching equipment, and the cars that they eventually were able to get. And he became a fairly good mechanic, so one of the jobs he got when he first got to town was working in a farm implement shop where they sold tractors and farm implements. And he became a mechanic. In order to make ends meet, my dad got another job, and he worked in the evenings at a bentonite plant. Now, bentonite is a word that probably most of you haven't heard of. Bentonite is a type of soil. It's a shale-like soil that when mined, and mining means they just use large earth scrapers to harvest this soil, and they would scrape it, and then they would take it to a plant, and this plant would grind it, crush it, and fire it, and turn it into a dust, a real fine dust material. And when this dust material would be mixed with water, it became very gummy and water-soluble. And so this bentonite would be used when they would construct large dams. They would use this as a sealer in the dams to allow the soil to retain in the dam to retain the water a lot better. And bentonite was a big business in this part of the world because the geological structure of that part of the country had large deposits of this bentonite. Well, my dad worked in this bentonite plant in the evenings, full shift, two or three nights a week. He would work after he got off work at 6, 7 o'clock. He would start work at the bentonite plant and work a shift until midnight or later, and then come home and go to sleep and then get up and have his day job. And he did this for a number of years. Well, while he was working at this bentonite plant, he met my mother. Now, because she was the brother of a co-worker at the bentonite plant. And they struck up a relationship and eventually a romance. My dad was much older than my mother at the time. My mother was just 16 or 17 when they started dating. Eventually were married and I came along. And so we had a situation here where my dad was in his early 20s and my mother being a teenage mom. And my dad had these two jobs. He worked all day, and then he would go to work at night and on weekends. And so he was working all the time, and he had a teenage mom with a new baby living with grandma, my grandmother, my dad's mom. That put a lot of stress on the relationship. Well, that relationship never survived. And very early after I was born, soon after I was born, they separated. And so I got a kind of a new maternal image in my life. My grandmother was the person that really raised me from the diaper stage right up until I was 6 or 7 years old when she eventually passed away. Well, my dad continued to work. He, being somewhat of an entrepreneur, he left being a mechanic at the tractor implement shop and went out and started his own auto repair business. He also stopped working at the bentonite plant and took a job with the railroad, Union Pacific Railroad. And back in those days, the railroad, I have some pictures actually of my dad and myself standing in the cabs of locomotives, the steam engines, the old large black steam engines that were run on coal. And then eventually these steam engines were switched out for diesel engines, big diesel engines that you'd filled with diesel fuel, and big locomotives, the yellow locomotives that you still see today that pull long numbers of boxcars. And that was what he worked in. He would fuel these locomotives and steam engines, and he would do this from 7, 8 o'clock at night until 1 or 2 in the morning, and then he would go back to his shop and run his business of being an auto mechanic. Well, while he was running his auto mechanics business, he met my stepmom, and they got married and moved in. After my grandmother passed away, I moved in with my new family, my stepmom, and she had a boy also about the same age as I was and became my stepbrother. And my world changed because I was a spoiled little boy being raised by grandma into a new mom that had a different idea on discipline and how a family should be managed. And so I had a rather difficult transition at that period of my life. My mother worked for the Utah and Idaho Sugar Company, which was sugar beet. So the plant, a sugar beet plant in town, and she was the office manager. And so she worked her day job, was working as an office manager, and her night and weekend job was keeping books for my dad and his auto mechanics shop. And then my dad had his night job with the Union and Pacific Railroad. So I grew up in a household that had hard working parents, and I saw the entrepreneurial side of running a business. I would go out on summers and help my dad in the shop, and I'd wash parts, and I would sweep, and I would go with him to get parts for the auto cars, the cars that he was repairing, and the trucks and the big diesel engines that he would repair. I grew up seeing him running his own business and really realizing how hard it was to be a small business person and running your own business. Although I never really appreciated it at the time, it was just the life that I knew at the time. Well, as I grew, my dad decided that, you know, I needed to learn the work ethic also, and so he got me a job. When I was 11 years old, I got my first job as a dishwasher in a local cafe diner. And I was 7th, 8th grade at the time, and I was working two, maybe three nights a week, 2 or 3 hours a night, and then one, sometimes 2 days on the weekend, washing dishes. And I did that for a number of years. One good thing that came out of that is that I always had money. A lot of my friends never had money, but every week I got a paycheck, and I would put some of that money in the bank, and the rest would go in my pocket, and I always had money. And this idea of having money when I was 11, 12, 13 years old, it was my money. I had earned it. I took a lot of pride in that. I became much more cognizant of money. It wasn't given to me. I never really had an allowance. I had a job where I made my allowance, so to speak. Well, I was able to save enough money by the time I turned 16 to buy my own car, of which my dad, being an auto mechanic, he was able to find me a good deal on a car, and I got my first car and looked forward to, you know, driving it and becoming, you know, even more independent at that time. With my mother and father both working as hard as they were working, I spent a lot of time home alone, and I became very independent. Now, neither my dad or my mom spent a lot of time directly supervising me, so I became quite self-reliant. I was pretty much expected to fend for myself. I knew what to do. I knew how to fix my own meals. I sometimes washed my own clothes. I wouldn't say that I was a spoiled child by any means. I mean, I started out life as spoiled with my grandmother, but as I grew, watching my, you know, both my mother and father work as sort of entrepreneurial type of personalities in their businesses, I remember very clearly how hard they worked. As such, I spent a lot of time during the summers when all the other kids were out and the families would go on vacations. We never took, you know, many vacations, and I just hung out and was on my own. I often look back when you see the TV program that some of you might have seen, the Andy Griffith Show, where Opie, and Andy was a widower. Opie was raised by his grandma, and that was kind of my upbringing. I was raised by my grandma. You see the opening scene of that TV show where Opie and Andy are walking down the road, dirt road, with their fishing poles over their shoulders going fishing. Well, that's what I did. I didn't have my dad going fishing with me, but I went fishing. I didn't walk generally. I got my bike and I put my fishing pole on my bike along with my tackle box, and I rode either to a pond, a little lake where I'd fish all day long, or to a river where I'd fish. Catch fish, I'd bring them home, I would clean them and cook them. You know, I grew up in an era which was kind of Americana in many aspects, and I had a very small town upbringing. Became very independent and watched these entrepreneurial parents run their business. Well, my dad sold his mechanic shop when I was in high school, and he bought a gas station. I graduated from working as a dishwasher up to a short order cook. I worked in a small cafe. I would wash dishes, I would cook, and I would bus the dishes, wait on tables. And I did that for several years and eventually graduated from that to working as a gas jockey back when, you know, there were young men working in gas stations where you'd go out and ask the customer what type of gas they wanted, and they'd say, fill her up, and I'd fill them up, and I'd wash the windows, check the tires, check the oil. And I would do that in the summers when it was 100 degrees out, and I would do it in the winters when it was, you know, 10 below zero out. And I learned, you know, to work. And so I grew up in high school working, as I said, during the week and on weekends. And since my parents, neither one of them had graduated from high school, my dad was schooled in a one-room schoolhouse, stopped his formal education at 8 years old, and my mother at 10 years old, and my stepmom at 10 years old. And so they understood the value of education, I believe, but they never talked a lot about it. My dad always wanted me to get a good education, but he really couldn't tell me what a good education was all about because he didn't understand college or the value of college or even what the process was to get into college. But I was always told to get a better education. My dad didn't want me to work as hard as he had worked, and he wanted me to have a better life like most parents do of their children. I can remember one specific example talking about entrepreneurialism and the entrepreneurial mindset. I had a math teacher that was kind of one of those memorable personalities, one of those teachers you always remember. I didn't particularly care for her because I was not a fabulous student in high school, because I was always working and my parents never really twisted my arm to do homework. I was just expected to do it on my own. Since I worked late a lot of times during the week, I would come home and wouldn't do my homework. I would just get up early and go in to school early to get my homework done. But I had this math teacher. Her name was Mrs. Roberts. And she was probably in her late 50s, and she was my algebra teacher. Geometry and algebra teacher in high school. And I can remember her. She would talk about careers and the future, and she genuinely wanted to help the students in her class. Not that I was terribly interested in what she was saying most of the time, but I do remember her talking about, if you want to get a good job and become successful in life, if you're going to stay in a small town, you have to be a business person, you have to own your own business, or you have to be a doctor or a lawyer in order to, become a part of the community that would be respected and be financially successful. And that's what she observed. And I certainly lived in that type of environment. And I can remember thinking and looking around to the people that were successful and had the big houses and drove the nice cars and were thought of as successful. And yes, they were the people that owned their own business, and it was the local attorneys and the doctors that had the big house and the nice yards and the boat. And I remember that very specifically. And so very early in my life, I started thinking, although not consciously, but that thought was deposited in my mind that having your own business was something that I never consciously thought about, but I remember that discussion with Mrs. Roberts, and I thought about that from time to time throughout my life. Now, there are times in our lives when we have key events. There are decisions that we make in all of our lives that have a dramatic impact on the path that our lives take. Based on those decisions, the path will take us in different directions. And some of those decisions, if they're bad decisions, they take us into paths that create a lot of challenges and problems and difficulties. And if the decisions are better, sometimes better things happen to us. Well, there were a couple of decisions in my life in late high school that I consider kind of those fork in the road decisions. And I'd like to share a couple of those with you here today. One of those was my mother, as I said, was the office manager, and she worked for a gentleman who was the plant manager. Now, this was a major employer in town. There were probably several hundred people that owed their employment and livelihood to sugar factory in town. And this gentleman had come from Idaho, being the Utah and Idaho Sugar Company, the UNI Sugar Company, as the plant manager. He came, and he was probably at the time in mid-30s, had a beautiful blonde wife. They had a big house in the area. Their kids were about the same age that I was, actually a few years older than I was at the time. But he was a plant manager, and he was also a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is sometimes called the Mormon Church. And so for those of you who may know that church, they have missionaries. And he referred the missionaries to come by and see our family. And I remember one day there was a knock at the door, and my mom opened up the door, and there were these two young men standing there in these white shirts and ties. And she invited them in, and they told them why they were there, that Mr. Bergeson, it was his name, had referred them to our family. And so they chatted with my mom and eventually made arrangements to come by and, talk with us about their church. And my dad was not religious. I had never been to church. Probably half a dozen times when I was living with my grandmother did I go to church. There was a Methodist church not too far from where I grew up. And sometimes we would go to that church. I went to Bible school during the summer occasionally. Growing up, I can count the times on my hand, the number of times I went to church. And so I wasn't particularly educated, or I don't think we had a Bible in our home at the time. But anyway, these young men came by, and over the next year or so, I became somewhat interested in what they were talking about. My dad wanted nothing to do with any church. As far as he was concerned, churches were there to get your money. He had no time for the church, and I can remember very clearly when the missionaries would come by and knock on the door, you would hear the back door slam and the car start, and my dad would be backing out of the driveway as these missionaries would come in. Well, to make a long story short, I eventually joined the church and started to attend occasionally, but my work schedule was on Sundays most of the time. So even though I had joined the church and thought quite a bit about my spiritual life and things of that nature, I never really took it all that seriously. I was working a lot. I had friends. We spent a lot of time partying on weekends as I got older in my car and had a girlfriend. And there was always things to do. And Friday and Saturday nights, I would stay out really late and coming home in the wee hours of the morning, sometimes just getting up at 6 a.m. to go to my job at the gas station. Little time for anything else but my work, a little bit of school, and good times. That was the essence of my high school life. And my parents never really worried. I was a pretty good kid. I never got into trouble, so they had no real reason to be concerned. I was earning money and just going on with life, not thinking a lot about my future or anything. I was just going along to get along. Well, someplace along this journey of being a junior and senior in high school, I had been introduced to a college, and they were talking about a school. I probably went to an event or one of the weeknight youth activities or something, and they started talking about college, and there was Brigham Young University, which is a LDS school, a church-sponsored school, and there were a couple of junior colleges that were affiliated with the church, and I heard about that somewhere along the line. And I can remember when I was a senior in high school, and I had thought about college but hadn't done a thing about it. My parents didn't give me any advice or counsel that on what to do to apply for college. My friends had applied to college and had been accepted, and I was laying on my bed. I can remember this very clearly, staring at the ceiling, just thinking about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, I guess. And I had this epiphany. And it was just clear as day. It was like the room was kind of dark, and all of a sudden it was kind of bright. And I just had this epiphany where I absolutely knew for a certainty that I needed to go to college, get my rear end in gear, and do something about this. My parents had talked about it. I hadn't really given it much thought, but I knew when I got up from that bed that spring morning, I knew that I had to go to college. It wasn't a doubt in my mind. Well, for most schools, it was too late to apply, but I did remember this college that they had talked about. It was a junior college in Idaho, and it was affiliated with the church. And so I took it upon myself, and the next week or so, I got a hold of them, got an application, and submitted the application, and got accepted to go to college, this junior college in Idaho. It was called Ricks College. Now, there are these seminal events, as I mentioned, in my life that have this dramatic impact on the course your life will take. So those couple of things that happened while I was growing up, I became more religiously oriented, more spiritually concerned, I guess. And through that process, I was introduced to a college that I eventually went to. And those decisions completely changed the trajectory of my life. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that in our next episode. But after I got out of high school, I was off to college, and we'll pick up my backstory, my origin story, and how I got to where I am today on our next episode of Business Exit Stories, where you're getting to know a little bit about me. And hopefully, maybe someday I'll get to learn a little bit more about you. And maybe even for some of you, you'll be a guest on this podcast talking about your business or the business exits that you've been involved in. So this is Marvin L. Storm for the Business Exit Stories podcast. I'll see you on our next episode.